And welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland. Vicki's away today. She'll be back tomorrow. We have Edgar Meyer with us. Welcome.
Thank you.
Edgar Meyer, probably the most versatile bass player in the world today, and of course one of the busiest too. Glad to have you with us.
Glad to be with you.
You're playing with the Madison Symphony tomorrow night at, 7:30, and Saturday night at 8, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30, and the program includes Liszt's Les Preludes and Beethoven's Eighth, and double dose for you. You're playing Botticelli Bonacini.
Yeah.
Get my medium right.
Yeah.
The second concerto of his, and then also is the second concerto of yours, I think, right?
That's exactly right.
And needless to say, some variety there, too. The string bass, we should, I suppose, ask the obvious question about your instrument, and then we'll hear a little bit from it.
What's the obvious question?
What is that thing that you have there?
It's a bass. It's actually not quite the same as violins and cellos in that they're a separate family from the gamba family, which the double bass is actually a member of. So the gambas are precursors of violins and cellos, and I'm having a set of gambas made right now, and they are the standard ones are six stringed with tuned almost like a guitar. The double bass or bass viol, which actually really illustrates the relationship, is just simply a very big gamba. It has a history of, you know, doing things like, you know, playing an octave under the cellos, or its history got a lot more interesting in the 20th century when jazz showed up. Botticini, the fellow whose concerto I'm playing in the first half on the programs, actually was the most significant of the 19th century soloists, and he actually wrote his own music and played a lot of for lack of a better word, played a lot of lead on the bass. So, but that's essentially what the bass is.
And you have one that I think is, 1769?
It's made in Florence, Italy, by Giovanni Battista Gabrielli. It's an instrument my father fell in love with before I was born, and he encouraged me to buy when it became available from our friend George Hofer. And so I've had it since 1983.
And rumor has it that, despite having this wonderful bass,
yeah,
that you play with a $10 bow. Is that
well,
true?
It would not fetch a lot more on a blindfold test. It's a bow I've played since I was 11. I'm very used to it and comfortable with it. And it's a nuanced discussion, but I think the fine bows that cost lots of money have a lot of camber. That means a lot of bend, and they have a large tip, and they do certain things that are useful for a lot of people, but I just don't enjoy them that much. I grew up with something that was a little stiffer, and I'm a little more comfortable with it.
Well, will you favor us with the sound of the bow on the bass?
Well, it won't be the bow. I'll just do one pizzicato number, and I will. Yeah. Thank you.
Bravo. Well, you didn't leave too many parts of those strings untouched.
Yeah, you got to use what you got.
And what was that?
It's a short piece called Pickles, original piece.
That's on one of your CDs, if I remember right.
There's a version of it with Yo-Yo Ma and Mark O'Connor.
Yeah, very popular combination, you and Yo-Yo Ma and Mark O'Connor.
It was popular with me. I like doing it.
Now, on the other extreme, you have been a long time very involved in playing those solo cello suites of Bach, but of course making them the stuff of the double bass.
Yeah, I mean, they'll never be the stuff of the double bass in a sense, in that they're cello pieces and they're conceived to be played on the cello, but they are, you know, the most interesting unaccompanied music ever written for a bass clef instrument, and Bach is my favorite musician of all time, and so I've spent a lot of time with the pieces, and a lot of it just in the hope that some of that would, you know, kind of sink into my own skin.
You had an interesting approach. That is, you started out playing them very, very, very slowly, and then just gradually developed the technique to play them more up to speed.
Oh, I still go back and play them slowly a lot, but yeah, the big issue being that they're technically very difficult, and in order to really maximize, to get them as well in tune as possible and to learn to really play them efficiently, working on them slowly, you know, reaps very substantial benefits. I mean, you eventually have to play them quickly in order for them to sound like music, but you know, these things I actually love playing them slow. It's for me, I guess that's what I would have done instead of play scales or things like that. Other people have different ways of doing it, but for me, that was my kind of way of learning how to play the bass.
Well, I think there are still some opinions that say that those Bach suites were never meant to be performed anyway, that they were more technical exercises. They certainly seem to work that way. And you have some special challenges as a bassist, though, because the intervals can be, a couple of feet apart on the instrument.
Well, it forces, it really, one of the things that I ultimately ended up feeling was best to try to play these pieces on the bass is to play almost everything across the strings instead of shifting up and down much. And so, and that's turned out to be very useful. But yeah, it's a lot of work.
Well, let's hear one of your performances of the Bach then from a Sony CD. This is the prelude that starts the solo cello suite number 5 in C minor, played here on the double bass by our guest, Edgar Meyer. Edgar Meyer with the prelude to Bach's solo cello suite number 5 in C minor. Edgar Meyer playing his version for the string bass, his instrument, and back with him and more of his varied music in just a moment here on Wisconsin Public Radio. It seems to me there's a kind of a paradox with the string bass. Here you have this big instrument, biggest of the string instruments, you know, I call it the St. Bernard of the string family.
Oh, yeah.
And yet it has this delicate voice, I gather, that you have to actually scale down the orchestra in some ways in order to accommodate the voice of the string bass.
Yeah, well, it comes off as delicate. I mean, in some ways it's not that delicate, but that's certainly the impression you get from the audience. I'll try to explain this as well as I understand it. If you're in the room with the bass and you've got a violin and a bass, for instance, you may find that standing right next to it, that I'm actually louder than the violin in terms of just pure dBs right there. But because the sound is less focused, it has less higher partials, and because it's lower, the basic timbre of the sound and the tessitura of the pitch, what happens in an ordinary, or not an ordinary, but in a larger hall that has a lot of reverberance, is that the bass becomes kind of unfocused and hard to pick out, and but the higher notes of the violin just kind of shoot out, and so it gets perceived, you know, in a very different way, and so that has to be thought about, and you know, in terms of how you write for it and how you deal with it. And so in that sense, the voice seems quite delicate. And also that, you know, you have to get into a fairly high register, which I don't, it's not more fragile, but it is a higher register. It's not, you know, tending toward the falsetto. That's a little too strong a way to put it. But and you have to do things like that in order to get into a melodic register because, you know, the open strings are quite low. And that's not, most people don't really perceive a lot of melody down there, even though there is a lot down there. But to get on up the neck, then that's when the instrument starts to get into a region that most people would perceive as more melodic.
So in the second concerto of yours that you're playing with the Madison Symphony this weekend, you actually dealt, what, the trumpets and the trombones out of the mix?
Absolutely.
And for percussion, you didn't want to be drowned out by percussion either, so you actually had devised a unique percussion instrument for this.
Yeah, my friend Sam Bacco was also here, and he built and designed the instrument and plays it, and essentially wanted something that was a pitched percussion instrument, but that was not anywhere near as powerful or penetrating or sustained as a marimba, for instance. Something closer to a wood drum, I mean a wood block or a log drum, but even, you know, a little less focused than that and a little softer. And I wanted, you know, because I wanted to be able to have it accompany the bass well and to give me kind of a rhythmic thing to fall off of in addition to the orchestral sounds. And so we actually did quite a few prototypes of different sounds, and I liked the PVC pipe for the way it interacted with the bass, and also it handled certain things really well. Like even though we don't take a lot of advantage of it, the instrument is designed with 24 note octaves, and so the PVC pipe actually handles that very well, and it occasionally gives a sound almost like the drum is, you know, the pitch is sliding or things like that.
So yeah, you'll hear notes in between notes.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, let's indulge in a little exercise here. It's always fun to play recordings of artists who haven't heard those recordings for a long time and see how well, you know, they hold up.
You're about to play Speed the Plow Medley. It's a duet that I'm playing with Mark O'Connor. And, you know, Mark's one of my favorite musicians. And when I first heard him, I heard a record of his that was just plain Texas fiddling. And he is certainly... it is the roots of who he is. I mean, it is how he learned to play the violin. And when he recorded the record, I heard he was playing like two guitars and a bass, and that's, you know, the way you would normally play that music. And he did this medley called Speed the Plow, which I would have to say is a simply standard setting in terms of that type of fiddle playing. And I had the nerve to ask for the privilege of playing it with him, you know, and I essentially wrote a counterpoint to it. And so I haven't heard this in years, but I'm curious to see, you know, because it was a chance to try to get inside of his groove a little bit, but to put a little bit of my mark on it. And I'm just curious to hear it because I'm such a fan of Mark's and want to see how I did all these years later.
Speed the Plow Medley. What did you think of Speed the Plow Medley after 10 years?
I thought that I wasn't always getting it. I was surprised. My pocket was a little tight. You know, Mark's is so deep on that music. I felt like I was a little sketchy on the time every once in a while, a little ahead of him or a little stiff. He feels that music in a deep way, and I don't think I was getting it. I think that I had made a lot of progress. That's better than I could have done 10 years before that. But I'd like to see how I could do now.
So you'd like to record it again?
I don't know. Or something
or
like
or
it.
At least play it in
it's
concert.
It's just, it's exciting. There's a new generation of young Texas fiddle players that I've gotten to know. And it's just neat. There's these brother and sister pair, the Tashina and Tristan Claridge, and they still play that same beat way back there. It's almost like, as a friend of mine said, it sounds like it's Russian and it's dragon at the same time. but it's neat. And I was new to it, and I can hear that I was new to it. And also, I'd written myself a hard part, and I was busy trying to play it.
Well, very candid critique, very enlightening, too. And it would be fun to hear a second version of that. In the meantime, we have some other things, too, including that 12:30 quiz question. We'll get to that in a minute or two and remind you that our guest today is Edgar Meyer, one of the great string bassists of all, and particularly of our time. And he's playing with the Madison Symphony tomorrow night. That's Friday at 7:30. Saturday night at 8, and Sunday night, or Sunday afternoon at 2:30 at Overture Hall in Madison. And the program includes Liszt's Les Preludes and Beethoven's Eighth Symphony, and involving Edgar Meyer will be the Bottesini Double Bass Concerto No. 2 and his own Concerto No. 2, which promises to be quite exciting. Now, what have we here?
Okay, we're about to hear a piece called Sliding Down. It's actually, Bela suggested the title. It was a piece of, I was thinking of Jerry Douglas at the time, so it's a little bit evocative of him, and then he's a very sweet personality. The song is almost sweeter than, it's almost too sweet. It's almost like a pop song, but it was just fun. Bela had always questioned whether we should record it or not, mainly because he didn't write it, but what happened was that he thought it was a little too sweet, and so what we did to kind of, and it turned it a little bit into a novelty thing, although the recorded version I'm actually quite fond of, because we decided to all play a bunch of different instruments, and we would switch as we go, and we would play it live this way too, so it's not really a studio trick, so much. It's we would actually get it in different chairs and go move to another instrument as the song progressed, and it's fun because at the heart of the song you hear us on our main, Bale and I are our main instruments on banjo and bass, and Mike on guitar, which is one of his main instruments, although mandolin really is his main instrument. But so the music actually gets to a whole other kind of intensity with us on the main instruments. But it's just kind of a sweet song that and with Mike Marshall and Bela Fleck.
Sliding Down, the name of the piece, Edgar Meyer and Company.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention one more thing, since it's not that obvious. I kind of half explained it, but what happens is, it begins with I'm playing piano, and then Bela comes in on mandolin, or no, Mike comes in on mandola, and throughout the course of it, I actually don't know if Mike plays any mandolin or not. He switches to guitar, but Bela starts on mandolin and then switches to banjo. No, he plays a tiny guitar, a papoose, at some point, and then switches to banjo, or I don't know what the order was, but I also do some mandocello. So I think each of us do two or three different instruments in some order. I don't know if that was clear in the way I explained it.
Yeah, but not the colorful names of some of those instruments.
Yeah.
That's a good old Renaissance tradition, isn't it, though, to kind of swap off instruments during a performance?
I don't know. We had a wonderful time with it, though. That record, George Gruen lent us a bunch of instruments. He has, like, you know, some match sets of Lloyd Lohr mandocello, mandola, and mandolins, and, you know, a wonderful Civil War era guitar. And I remember there were literally a dozen instruments that were kind of collectibles that we had in the studio with us, in addition to our own collections, which are considerable.
Yeah, sweet piece, Sliding Down. Now, what about the quintet? We haven't heard yet. We've talked about, but not heard anything exactly by Edgar Meyer, except not since Pickles, anyway, that you started out with.
Well, I mean, technically Sliding Down is mine, but it's just a, you know, it's a little melody.
Mm-hmm.
This we're going to hear the first movement of a piece that I wrote for myself to play with the Emerson String Quartet, and it's a little more involved of a composition. This first movement is, it's close to a theme and variations, or maybe almost like writing on a ground bass. It's somewhere in that zone. It starts off with a AABA thing that keeps on happening, and it does transform over the course of the almost 9 minutes, and it's not a theme and variations in the sense that sometimes the variations are not completely distinct. In that sense, it's more like writing on a ground bass, but it's really in between those kind of ideas.
Were you ever tempted to actually give these movements colorful titles other than Movement 1, 2, 3, and 4?
Well, you know, 20 years ago, I was doing that fairly often. These, you know, I think, you know, as I kept on getting older, I was, I aspired to, for music that really kind of passed the blindfold test, that you didn't have to see it on television, you didn't have to know what the title was. I was, you know, looking for music that just kind of spoke to you without props. And careful what you wish for, because now I've got a complete disconnect with words and music, and I couldn't get it back if I wanted to. And so, you know, now titles are a complete problem for me.
Wow, fascinating. Well, maybe out there somebody will come up with one for Movement 1 of Edgar Meyer's Quintet for String Quartet and Double Bass with the Emerson String Quartet and our guest, double bassist Edgar Meyer. First of the four movements of Edgar Meyer's Quintet for String Quartet and Double Bass. Edgar Meyer, the double bassist with the Emerson String Quartet, and a pretty piece.
Oh, thanks. And we got one last thing we're going to play, and this is an advertisement for the concert. And the fun part of this is that this is the first movement of the Bottesini Concerto, and I'm going to play it with the Madison Symphony, and we will. The only thing that will be substantially different is I'll make some mistakes in the concert, although I don't know where yet.
Well, that sounds provocative.
And so the only way you'll be able to find that out is to show up at the concert.
Gotcha. Thank you. providing his own colorful cadenza there to the first movement of the Bottesini Double Bass Concerto No. 2 in B minor. Edgar Meyer, he'll be playing that this weekend with the Madison Symphony. There he was performing with the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra with Hugh Wolf conducting.